Dusty and Friends.
What would you rather be, a lion or a panda?
Coach, I'm me. Why would I want to be anything else?
This is Dusty and Friends with Dusty the Fan Man Hera.
I'm not sure you realize how psychologically healthy that actually is.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Hour number two, Dusty and Friends, and on what has quickly become one of the busiest days in the sports world in quite some time, with NBA free agency starting in 2 hours. Kevin Durant has requested a trade. You have USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12 by all accounts and heading towards the Big Ten, according to reports. We have our final friend coming in Dusty and Friends. As we'll start on Tuesday, if you miss the announcement, we'll start on Tuesday. Danny Morang will be joining us noon to three every single week. But our last friend is Lamar Hurd. Wow. And we're bringing Lamar Hurd in. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I was not aware of that information.
Oh, really?
Till you just said that. So that's awesome. I know Danny, and I've enjoyed Danny and his work and stuff. So that's awesome, man.
It'll be a ton of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. But I really appreciate you coming in and sitting in with us today, because this has been a crazy time, because we've tried to schedule and reschedule this one for quite a bit to get you in studio down here. But so I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I didn't know today was going to be the sports day it ended up being. But that's what makes it exciting. One of the many aspects is, you know, it's a year-round cycle. There's always something jumping off.
Yep.
And this is a pretty explosive type day.
Now, I love your story and your path, because you now are an Oregonian through and through. Mm-hmm. And you're a guy that you came to Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, it was not the traditional path. It was recruitment. You became a Beav.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that I love, when the transplant story comes from a guy who comes to Oregon, takes a look around and says, this is going to be home for me.
Yeah, well, it helped that my first day stepping foot in Oregon, it was like this, you know, like 75 degrees, perfectly sunny. So I got to see Oregon at one of its best days. But that's not the reason I made the decision. I was aware of the fact that it rained and it's cloudy, but that stuff doesn't really get to me. So I got a chance to, like, meet people, and the people that I met when I first visited Oregon State back in 2002, both my teammates, support staff, it just felt like a home type of atmosphere and a place that I thought would fit really well with me. And, you know, I was well aware of a lot of the struggles Oregon State's basketball team had, and I had a similar path in my high school, where I went to a super tiny private school in Texas, wasn't really known for much. And by the time I graduated, along with my teammates, we were a top 25 team in the country. We were the school that now college coaches are packing our gym in the summer to watch guys. And nobody would have ever envisioned that. But, you know, that came through a lot of hard work, commitment, dedication. We had a lot of guys make some big sacrifices. I moved out of my mom's house when I was in the sixth grade to go attend this school. And the only way I could do it, because of where I lived in Houston, I had to live with a basketball coach during the weekdays and go home on weekends, because traffic in Houston and stuff is too much. So, you know, we made those types of commitments. And, you know, I was really excited when I came to Oregon State, because I was prepared to make the same type of commitments and sacrifices to try to do our best to have an impact on the university. So I didn't know I'd be here 20 years later. Like, that that was not the game plan. But it worked out, and I'm really happy about it.
You know, that's an amazing thing. And we hear about, you know, in sixth grade, we hear about the kids moving out of home and going to, like, training academies over in Europe, right? Mm-hmm. And that's commonplace, and it's pretty normal. How's that conversation come up with your basketball coach and your mom and saying, hey, he's got a gift?
Yeah. I have an older brother who at the time was going to one of the big public schools in Houston at the time. And, you know, as you could probably imagine, in Texas, those biggest schools, they're really large. So what was happening is my older brother was kind of getting lost in a shuffle a little bit. His grades were falling off a little. And my mom just wanted to make sure he had a good mentor type of figure in his life. We didn't have a dad at home with us growing up. So my mom really wanted to have that. And so the guy she went to was a gentleman who was a youth pastor at our church in Southwest Houston, who also happened to be this basketball coach at this little tiny private school north of the city. And so this guy would come and pastor at our church on Sundays, and then weekdays he'd be at this private school. And my mom asked that guy, his name is Jerome Tang, can my older brother go to the school and just be under him? And so when I was in the fifth grade, my older brother did that. And so he would be gone every weekday and then come home on weekends. And every time he'd come home, he would tell me, the little fifth grader who loved basketball more than anything, about this little tiny school where the coach has the key to the gym. There's glass backboards, which for me growing up, that's a big deal. We didn't have glass backboards. We didn't have access to stuff like that. Yeah. So he's telling me all these stories. And I just start begging my mom that whole year to let me go to the school. And like most parents of a 10 or 11 year old, you know, her immediate answer was always no. But I never let up. And I never gave her a reason, even, you know, at that point in my young life, to kind of not trust kind of what I was really feeling.
Yeah.
And so I think it became really clear to her, like, this was like a deep burning passion for me to go and be able to do this. It wasn't like some spur of the moment. Mom, I want to go to this birthday party. Okay, never mind. This person's having a party. I'm going. Like, it wasn't that kind of decision making. And so she essentially made a deal with me and said, you know, I'll let you go try this out in the sixth grade. And if anything comes back where your behavior isn't up to par or your grades or something, like, you're coming back home. And that's it. So I knew I had one chance to get it right. And I did. And so I went there and, you know, and I loved it. And my coach was able to tell my mom and report back to her, like, he's really loving this. He's really thriving in it. And I think it's something he really wants to do for the next 7 years and, like, really see this thing through. And it's, of course, hard to know.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's hard to, like, trust a sixth grader and say, is this the plan you want to do? But I was just always one of those kids. I think that I didn't really jump around a whole lot with stuff. And, like, they knew if I said something, you know, like I really meant it, I think, as much as I possibly could. So they just allowed me to kind of walk that road. And every year, I think I just kind of reinforced to them that it was the right decision for me.
Wow, that's amazing. And that kind of drive that you can sense, I'm sure that after your mom told you no a few times, that she was like, okay, well, he's not going to let up. I mean, was it like that with every, like, with other things where you found your passion and that was it?
Oh, well, see, that's the thing. So, like, no, because there weren't a whole lot of things I cared about like that. Like, as a kid, it was clear basketball was my thing. And I would do anything. Like, I was the kid that would say, no, I don't want to go to my best friend's birthday party if I can go play basketball instead. And it's not that I didn't love my best friend or whatever. What I would rather do is I try to talk my best friend into having a basketball party. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so, like,
absolutely.
It was always what I cared about. And I made that really clear to people even, like, off the jump. Like, hey, look,
that's
I just want to let you know, this is me. This is what I like. This is, if that doesn't work for you, I understand. But it was just always a love of mine. And it really started from my mom, because my mom was the big basketball fan in our family. So I got it from her, you know, when I was 2 or 3 years old. And then it just took off from there.
And what a time to grow up in Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Clyde coming home to the Rockets. You got championships. Yeah. And championships breed a fire for any young fan to gravitate to the sport.
Totally. Championships, star players. In Houston at that time, we did have that with Clyde coming back, with Hakeem Olajuwon, the championship seasons, you know, the clutch city, you know, the whole never underestimate the heart of a champion. Like, that whole thing, the whole city grabbed a hold of that. So, yeah, man, that was definitely an exciting time. But the thing for me, even if they weren't winning at that time, I just loved basketball. Like,
right.
I remember the people on the Rockets at that time that, like, not everybody remembers. You know, like, Matt Bullard used to be their TV analyst. And when I joined the Blazers, I actually had a call with Matt. Somebody put me on a call with Matt when I was trying to – it's right before I joined the Blazers – and I was trying to see, like, okay, you know, should I take this job? You know, what's the pros, cons? Because I don't know about this whole world, what's going on. And somebody said, hey, we can, you know, get you a call with Matt Bullard. And I'm like, Matt Bullard? You know, like, to me, that was like putting Hakeem on the phone. Because I had grown up watching Matt, and I have a respect for it. You know, like, I know a lot of players in the league, unless you're a star, you don't get talked about a certain way. But, like, I understand, as I know you do, how good even those Matt Bullard type guys are. And for me, it was less about, you know, like, what you accomplished, like the level you reach as an NBA player. And it's more so, I know the sacrifices I made during my journey and the work I put in. So I can only imagine what you did as well. And I have a high level of respect for that. So, you know, when I got a chance to talk to him, that was a big deal for me. And eventually kind of become friends with him and things like that. So, yeah, starting off for me, that was my clear-cut passion and is the thing I really cared about so much. And it's why today, for me, I understand how much impact you can have in the basketball world on kids like myself, who I would have done anything as a kid if I felt like this might help me in my basketball career.
Oh, absolutely.
So if I had a chance and Matt Bullard came to something I was at, or Kenny Smith or Kim Olajuwon, and they said something, I was remembering that. And I was living that, good or bad.
Exactly.
You know, so fortunately for me, a lot of the messages I got, particularly through my coach who I moved in with, they were good messages. And that helped shape my life. And it's why I appreciate, you know, good leadership and influence now in the basketball world. You know, like you watch a Blazer game, I'll talk about Damian Lillard all day and night. And it won't have nothing to do with him shooting 30 and 40 foot jumpers. It's the influence I know he has on youth and other people. And like, that's a really big deal. Like, that's not something I take for granted. And I just really appreciate that.
One of the things I think is really cool about that, your story and your path, is we hear so much negativity about the AAU world and the AAU circuit, or coaches, you know, being sharks in the water and it not working out, where there are a lot of people in the AAU world, in the basketball world, in the sports world that truly do care about the young people that they're with as well.
Yeah.
And it's not all just the negativity and the negative stories of guys just wanting to get a couple bucks off a family.
Correct. One thing that's really unfortunate to me when I look at the AAU world is a lot of those men and women who are doing it, you know, the quote unquote right way, or, you know, the way that's about the kids, putting the kids first, is about teaching them the right things, really working with them. A lot of times those might not be what are the best or most talented teams. A lot of the shoe sponsors, you know, they're not sponsoring, you know, what you would say is character first. And I'm not saying that as a slight, you know, saying that they sponsor bad character teams. I'm just saying you got to have talent.
Yep.
You have to have talent. You go on the Adidas Gauntlet circuit. You go on the EYBL circuit. Those teams are teams that have kids who are going to be playing at big-time Division I schools, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, one thing that I wish did happen more than it does is finding, like really finding those coaches or mentors who are really teaching kids the things they need to know, who are working with them the right way, who are preparing them for life, because that stuff matters. Like, I used to be in youth basketball, and I used to work with kids of different talent levels. I've coached kids who didn't play past their sophomore years in high school, and I've coached kids who have played Division I. The one message that I remember a lot of people telling kids, like if I had a guest speaker come in, or, you know, if I just heard other people talking to kids, they would say, they would try to almost scare tactic the kids and saying, all right, if you don't have a good attitude, then this Division I coach isn't going to look at you. Or if you, and I never told our kids that.
Right.
And the reason I never told them that is because, unfortunately, that's not true. Because if you're good enough, they, depending on how good you are, they will find a way to work with certain things.
The sliding scale.
Yeah. And so I would want to tell them the truth, but then tell them, now, if you want to know what I think you should do, I think you should be a good teammate, because that's the right way to be.
Yeah.
You make your teammates feel better. You make this a team game. I think you should be respectful to the officials, because that's just a humane thing to do. You know, like that was always kind of the way that I would go about talking to them, because character just isn't always put first for various reasons. And again, I'm not here like to try to indict certain groups or things of that nature, or what they do. Rather, I would love to just continue trying to uplift those other ones, because I've seen a lot of people who continue to try, even if it means they might not win a game or they might not get a certain talented kid. They're willing to kind of put what they feel are their morals, or what they're trying to teach their kids, above everything else.
Lamar Hurd is with us. He is our friend today, Trailblazers color analyst. We're talking about your why, and that's one of the great things that we're finding out with our these friends shows is the why for people. And you go from a small private school in Houston to Oregon State University, and your life in basketball has just continued. And every time there's a dip, it comes right back up, and you're here now working for the Portland Trailblazers. I want to continue to kind of talk about your why. We're going to have a lot to get to, folks. This is live. Yeah. This is not a taped interview that we're doing here. We do know everything that's going on with SC, UCLA, and their plans to leave the Pac-12, and Kevin Durant requesting a trade from Brooklyn. I mean, all of these things are known. And we'll talk about your time, especially with the Beavs and with the Portland Trailblazers, too, and how you ended up landing with the Portland Trailblazers. We continue with Lamar Hurd next. This is Dusty and Friends on The Fan.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Our friend today, Lamar Hurd, Trailblazers color analyst, very gracious enough to give us some time and hear about Lamar. If you missed, we talked at length on USC, UCLA to the Big Ten. We'll get to that in a little bit here, but if you missed it, check it on the Les Schwab Tires podcast at 1080thefan.com. We talked about the implications where Oregon and Oregon State could end up going out of that. So make sure you check that one out. And we also talked Kevin Durant requesting a trade out of the Brooklyn Nets as well. But we have Lamar here with us. And, you gave us a very good picture of what it was like to – for you going sixth grade, moving out, going to a small private school and ending up as a top 25 ranked high school basketball team. I mean, that's gotta be an incredible feat that you guys were talking about, and your team, you and your teammates still probably talk about to this day, is how you guys turned that program around.
It was something that we were definitely proud of. And I always remember hearing people talk about, it's not the destination, it's the journey. And I know exactly, what they mean whenever that reference pops up, because I remember all of the days, not literally all the days, because there were a lot of them, but I vividly remember a lot of times of being in this little shed we had that I don't think it could have been more than 600 square feet. I mean, I don't even think it was that, which was our full-on workout facility. So all of our weights and athletic equipment was in this little tiny spot, and being in there on 90 degree summer days with no air conditioned units and just going after it. And same thing with our gymnasium. We had a gymnasium, Dusty, that had a sport court. We couldn't afford wood court, so we had a sport court. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah. The little squares that, yes, you kind of click together, yes, plastic. Yeah.
Yes. So what would happen is when it would rain, like rain in Texas is different than rain here in Oregon. Like when it rains in Texas, you feel it. It hits hard, so and it floods. So it would rain, and in our gym, the water would start to fill up under the floor.
You're kidding.
Because we had we have ventilation. We didn't have insulation. Like, we didn't have none of that. So there were times when we would have rain on a game night, and we would have to postpone a game or cancel it or tell the other team, give us 35 or so minutes. We would then go pick up the floor, our team. It's not like we had a cleaning staff or a janitorial crew. We would go pick up the floor one by one, piece by piece, wipe underneath it. And as long as the rain had stopped outside, we were good. You know, you put the floor back down. We do the shop vac stuff, suck all the water up, and then we would play the game.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
That's just how we did things all the time. And one of the good things I feel like that helped me develop early on, and my coach led the way on this, is there were never any excuses. Yeah. There was never any reason of why we couldn't be good. And we had a lot of stuff stacked up against us. We were a 1A private school in Texas where K through 12, we had about 140 people on a good year. It's not like we just had talent flocking left and right. What happened is we started to build it from the start. We started to put the work in. And we had personalities, my coach leading the way, where people were like, man, I like this guy. I just want to be around him. So then I got a chance to join the Houston Hoops AAU team, which at that time, and still might be the case now, I'm not sure about the whole Houston AAU scene as much now, but at that time, we happened to be the top team in the area. And like my center was Kendrick Perkins, who is now an ESPN analyst. Yeah, so like that was a team I played on in high school. And so when I joined that team, there were guys I played with who I started engaging in discussions with of, hey, you want to come play with us?
Yeah.
Like, you want to come? And so we started getting talent like that kind of one by one where guys just saw what we were about. And they saw, like, we worked. We didn't have anything over other schools. We didn't have, like, jersey sponsorships or anything like that until we got to the end, until we got
good. Exactly.
And then people started kind of jumping on. But it's definitely something that we're proud of, but I think more so grateful for, because that experience, I know for me, shaped a whole lot of kind of how I see things moving forward and just day by day.
So Kendrick Perkins, you played AAU ball with him. Did he end up going and playing at the high school as well, or did he?
No, Kendrick didn't go. Kendrick played for a school called Beaumont Ozan. They were a very good team. They were 4A public school team at that time. They're one of the best teams. And so this is, I actually tried to get Kendrick to come to Oregon State. So, and really? I felt like I was kind of close if the NBA wasn't an option. So he ended up committing to Memphis.
Okay.
But what happened is my team, Heritage Christian in Texas, played Kendrick's team, Beaumont Ozan, my junior season. We had a good game. They beat us. The game was so good and so talked about around Houston. The following year, they had us play again, and they put us at the University of Houston. So it was like a big marquee type game. We played the game there. And it was another really good game. Went down to the wire. They edged us out. And between that and just AAU, like Kendrick and I were developing a good relationship. So once I went to Oregon State, he's a year behind me. I remember I wrote him a message on Facebook. And I was like, Perk, look, man, it's cool. It's in the Pac-10. You can come in. Our center, we had a guy named Philip Ritchie, who was the starting center my first year. He was a senior. I was like, he's going to be gone. You can step in, this and that. And I think he probably gave me something back like, yeah, I'll think about it. He wasn't thinking about it. Like, he was going straight to the NBA. But that would have been great had we had a chance to get our hands on him.
Because, he's an incredible player. And as an analyst, and he's blossomed over the last year or so. But he was also one of the scariest people on the basketball court when he played.
He was Shaq in high school. He was like
I can imagine it.
He was dominant. He was... Nobody could do anything with him. I remember we went to Peach Jam my junior year, after my junior year of high school, and Peach Jam is like, now it's like the EYBL Final Destination type spot.
The biggest AAU tournament is in Atlanta.
Yes, exactly. So growing up, it was just a huge tournament. And I remember we went there, and Kendrick just dominated everybody. And I remember thinking, like, wow, he's really this good? Because this is the best of the best.
Yeah.
And we knew he was really good for Houston and for Texas, but I hadn't seen him against that crew like that. And that's when it was, like, really evident to everybody. Like, yeah, he's going to the NBA. It's just a matter of when, not if.
He's different on a floor of people that are different.
Yes. Yes.
Of the elite, he was there.
He really
that's
is.
An incredible story. I had no idea. And I had no idea, like... I couldn't imagine here in the state of Oregon. I'm assuming like a 4A school in Texas is like, what, 1,500?
High school? I don't know the numbers
but bigger?
Probably bigger, yeah.
But playing a K-12 school that's 144, I couldn't imagine that anybody seeing like, you know what, this is a great idea.
I know, but that's where I got my first true lesson of how much people matter. Because the reason it was able to build... It started with our coach, who everybody gravitated towards. Everybody, he wasn't making any false promises. It's not like he had a pitch of, come here and I'll get you to the next level. How? You don't have no proof. he couldn't say that to anybody.
I'm shop-backing the basketball court.
Yeah, we're shop-backing it. Like, what do you mean, come here? What? Nobody wants to do this, this little tiny school. You guys don't even have a football team.
Yeah.
We didn't have a track. So when we would do training outside, there was this corner. We would go outside in the neighborhood where the school is and run this kind of corner block. And my coach measured it out by driving in his car of what equals a mile. And that's how we would know our mile runs. And we would go out there and train. Like, that's just how we did everything. But everybody was always willing to get on board with it because he just made it seem like, yeah, let's just do this. Yeah. And then we would just do it. And then that will kind of trickle down to me and the players. And it was really my real first experience of like how much people matter and how much they can shape things. Because everybody can talk a dream and say, I'm going to bring a championship here or I'm going to build this. But I got a chance to see like what kind of people it actually takes. Like what does the work ethic actually look like? What was the commitment look like? You know, like when you see this one thing that we're both looking at and you know, you see a challenge. Well, here's what I see. Like, I just got a chance to see just the two different sides of all that. And it was really neat.
Leadership matters. Mm-hmm. It's leadership for a reason. Like, you were talking about the difference between just talking and then teaching somebody how to do it. I mean, that's what leadership is. It's kind of showing you guys the way. I find that kind of as the common thread, as the things that you've been saying in just two segments in here, is that the leadership and kind of being out in front and showing people the direction to go in.
Yeah, living it more than talking it. That was one of the things I really got a chance to see is through my coach, even through my mom. You know, sometimes I get talking about this and I feel like I don't give my mom enough credit just because basketball was like my thing. But I grew up with my mom. Yeah. My mom was the one leading me, my two brothers. They lived it every day, all the time. And I think when you kind of have a lifestyle of being the example, like you don't have to talk about the example so much. And then the times when maybe you do, it hits harder because I know everything you're saying right now, like, yeah, you've been living it, you know, and they would, especially my coach, you know, like, I just remember things that he would ask us as players to do, and I always knew, you're not asking us to do something you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to do it. You know, I need to go do it. Like, you're not just saying this. This is something you would do to or have done.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was easy to follow that path.
I can already tell. I mean, I've never met your mother before, but she's a saint because three boys.
Yeah.
You have to be.
Yeah, you do. You know what? And, you know, although I was the angel, Dusty, my two brothers, man, they were challenging. They were challenging.
We're here with the Lamar Hurd, Trailblazers color analyst. When we talk about your why is it that basketball has continued to be that thread in your life? I want to get into that. First, though, we got Rust with SportsCenter.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Our friend of the day, Lamar Hurd, Trailblazers color analyst, kind enough to carve out a big chunk of time. And I love this conversation so far. One thing that we need to clear up, though, because it was one of those ones where I went, whoa. I asked you about the sustained success of the high school program. Yeah. We talked about how the rise of your high school team from struggling when you first got there to top 25 ranked National League team by the time you left. And I asked you during the break, so have they sustained that success?
Nope. The reason is the school is not even a school anymore and has not been for, I think, about 18 years or so.
Wow.
So what happened for me is when I went to the school, the guy who was my coach told me, he said, no matter what happens, I'm not going to leave the school before you graduate. So you don't have to be worried about me getting another job somewhere else. And he had offers too, especially once we started getting good. He could have very easily bounced to like pretty much any high school in the state. But he also started having college coaches say, hey, we need to get this guy on our staff. He has this pipeline and that kind of thing. But he stayed there. And so after my freshman year at Oregon State, Baylor University came after him. And he joined that staff. And I almost transferred from Oregon State after my freshman season because once he got that job, Scott Drew, and he, they they wanted me, and they were very respectful about it. They understood, like, I was enjoying my time at Oregon State, and they didn't want to just kind of, like, just take me from the program. But we did have the conversation, and everybody was aware of it. There were no back channels going on. My coach at Oregon State knew what was going on, and they gave me some time to, like, really think about it. And I ultimately decided to stay at Oregon State. The year after he left the school, or the year he left, somebody else took over the program. But it goes back to what I'm saying. Like, it takes a certain leader to be able to make that thing work. And it's really hard. So the school ended up not being able to survive at that location anymore. And then it moved about 20 minutes south of that area and became another name, but it was the same basketball team, same staff, all of that. DeAndre Jordan in the NBA actually went to this school. So he's a guy. Von Wafer went to this school.
Von Wafer never had a shot he didn't like.
Yeah, and it was the same at my school. It was the same exact thing. So the school was still kind of going for a little bit, but it only made it so far, and it shut down, and it is no more.
Wow. And now your coach is at Kansas State.
Yeah, so my coach ended up went to Baylor. They won the national championship a couple seasons ago, and he just got hired at Kansas State this year.
Wow. That's an incredible story. And I mean, that kind of goes as you're setting everything up, the loyalty that, you know, he showed you when you were in high school. Mm-hmm. You showed it at Oregon State. You stuck it through at Oregon State, even though that must have been a really tough decision for you to make.
Yeah.
Not to go, not just play for your high school coach, but go back to your home state, too.
Yeah, it was really hard. It was really hard, especially because I actually committed to Baylor first when I was in high school. And I got out of that commitment because something about it just didn't feel right. And that was a whole long process. And, it wasn't. Like, I didn't have the ability to just commit to something and then back out. Like, my coach wouldn't let me do it. My mom wouldn't let me. But I told them, kind of similar to, like, when I was that fifth grader that was like, you know what, I think I should go to this school. I was telling them, I don't know what it is. I just feel like something's not right about this situation. And they had me sit and think about it for a couple of weeks. And, the feeling, it didn't go away. It intensified. And I told them, I was like, I think I need to get out of this. I need to call the coach and let him know. So what happened is I called the assistant coach at Baylor at the time. He's a guy named Kevin Lewis. And I told him, I said, Coach Lewis, I got some bad news for you, man. And he's like, well, I need to tell you something. And he said, I actually just accepted a job at TCU, Texas Christian University. So I'm not going to be there when you come to school. And I said, that's exactly something I needed to hear. Because I needed an in. The whole time I needed an in of how do I start this conversation with Dave Bliss, who's the head coach at Baylor at the time, and tell him this, that I'm not coming. He was planning on me coming and being a starting point guard with John Lucas Jr., who was there at the time. There was a kid named Lawrence Roberts who played in the NBA for a little bit. It was a good team. We were, like, expecting to do some things. And Coach Lewis, this is what made me know I was making the right decision. So you know, Dusty, how it is. In this kind of situation, a recruit calls an assistant coach, says, or an assistant coach tells a recruit, hey, I'm not going to be there. But what they tell him is, but you know what? You'll be fine. You should still, coach is still going to take care of you. Still going to be the same program. There's something to keep you on that track.
Yep.
And I told Coach Lewis how I felt. And his response to me was, I think you should tell Coach Bliss. There was no pushing back. There was no nothing. So I was like, okay, this is interesting. So I went to my coach's office, my high school coach. Went to his office, and it was like, all right, today's the day we call Coach Bliss and we tell him. I pick up the phone, call Coach Bliss, let him know how I feel. Hey, Coach Bliss, I don't really even know how to say this, but I'm not feeling totally comfortable. And then Coach Lewis called me and told me he's not going to be there. Coach Bliss just started cussing me out left and right.
Wow.
Left, and he went at me. And so my high school coach is right there next to me, and he can hear this, so he gestured for me to give him the phone. I gave him the phone so he could talk to Coach Bliss. Coach Bliss started cussing him out. So we just had to hang up the phone, and that was it. I've never talked to him or seen him since that. That was my last time with him. So look, this was the confirmation. I don't know if you remember this, but that next year, so this is 2002, at Baylor University, the whole program just got busted. There was drugs going on. There was all kind of nonsense. one of the teammates killed another teammate and buried him in a Waco desert, that would have been my freshman year at Baylor.
Oh,
had I gone through with it all.
My
so
goodness.
I don't know if I would have been able to be on Dusty and Friends had I gone on it.
When you said you committed to Baylor, I was like, I was doing the math in my head. I'm like, that's Dave Bliss.
It was that team. It was that
team. Oh, my goodness.
So then, that's another thing where my high school coach then went to be a part of that rebuild. And so that's why there's a lot of people, you know, they look back at Baylor now and he's like, man, this is the craziest rebuild ever. Like, how do they go from that to this? And for me, someone who lived kind of the build process we went through, like, none of it's surprising.
Wow.
At all. And I think the same thing is probably going to happen at Kansas State, where he's at now.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story. Like, that, the whole Baylor and you having that feeling in the pit of your stomach.
Yeah.
And not knowing anything that's going on there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that either. I didn't know.
Because all that stuff would have happened, as you said, your freshman year.
Yep.
And who knows, you know, what that looks like for your path moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where I look back at it and I know that there are certain experiences that happen, and I believe this happens in a lot of people's lives. It's not everybody, but there's certain things that happen where you have those moments and opportunities to kind of learn to trust whatever is maybe your intuition or, you know, your gut or whatever. But you have these kind of opportunities to exercise that and kind of see what does that look like for me? What was it I was feeling? And like really be honest kind of in that assessment of, okay, so I made this decision. Why did I make that decision? Was it for selfish reasons? Was it for somebody else instead of myself? And like just really examine all that stuff to get to the point where you really feel like, all right, I want to be considerate of everybody in this decision, but I got to do what's going to work for me.
Mm.
Because whatever that thing is, I think that's going to enable me the most to then be my best self for other people
moving forward.
And so that was like my first really big kind of experiment with that. And I think it's really helped me in making other big decisions that I've made since that time and kind of get to a place where I'm able to make them with some peace of mind.
Lamar Hurd is our guest. He's the friend of the day, Trailblazers color analyst. As we are trucking along, and I think you just became the most interesting man in the world because of these stories. We're only 48 minutes into this hour here, and I'm hanging on to every word. Your why as to why it keeps basketball is such a big part of you in moving forward. We still need to dive into that. We got a lot more to go here with Lamar Hurd, our friend of the day. This is Dusty and Friends on The Fan.
Hey man, I'm cool, lean on, but I'm not your property. Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Lamar Hurd is with us. He is a former Oregon State Beaver, now the Trailblazers color analyst. Again, if you've missed any of the show, we talked USC, UCLA really right from the get-go on the jump of the show, leaving the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. So go check that out, Les Schwab Tars podcast at 1080thefan.com. As these segments keep going on, we keep going over, but you know, one thing that I haven't asked you yet as we've been kind of going through your journey is what was it that stuck out about Oregon State for you that really made you say, yeah, the Beavs. I love the Beavs.
I think it was the people that I knew I was going to be surrounded around with the coaching staff. I really enjoy them. I had an assistant coach named Kevin Mouton, who now lives in Houston, and he coaches at Second Baptist High School in Houston, which is a huge high school. He's the kind of guy similar to my high school coach where, like, you'll go anywhere and just go play for that guy. So I loved him. The guy who was my head coach at the time, Jay John, did a great job of kind of presenting what he felt like was our mission, what was going to be what we were trying to go after, a school that hadn't played an attorney since 1990 and all those things. Like, those things didn't scare me about it because I just come from what, you know, what I come from. So it just felt very similar to, it just felt like it was me, like it was a part of me. Like a week before I took my visit to Oregon State, I took a visit to Arkansas. It was a similar situation. A new coach was coming in. I had a scholarship offer to come in, be a starting point guard from day one as a freshman. And at Arkansas, over in the SEC, they fill that arena. It's a good school and all that. It's exciting. So, like, I knew that, you know, I had that as well as an option. But there was, like, Arkansas had had success. And I just didn't feel like I'd really be creating any kind of impact the way that I would want to be able to do. Because you know how it is. You have a good team. Like, that galvanizes the student body. The professors,
it's huge.
The community, a community like Corvallis, a college town. So all of those things kind of wrapped up in one, and I felt like I could also attain there. What were my post grad plans? Which I wanted to be a pro. I wanted to be able to work in television when I was done playing. I just felt like I could do all that there. And then from a basketball perspective, my head coach at that time was coming from Arizona. And Arizona was Point Guard University back then. I mean, it still has been a lot throughout the last few years, but really back then especially. And I just felt like, hey, this is the guy that can help me as a point guard grow. And the funny thing is, he did help me grow a lot, but a lot of that came through clashes he and I had. He was the first coach I clashed with ever. I went to tons of basketball camps. I played on AAU teams. I had never had an experience with a coach like I had with this coach. And I don't say that to discredit him in any kind of way. He and I are friends. Anytime I go to the Bay Area, which is where he is, you know, we'll meet up, we'll have lunch. Like, all is good now. But, you know, there was a huge growing phase I went through with him, and more mentally than anything, which has helped me, I think, more than anything in my adult life than any other time. Some of the mental hurdles I learned how to clear at that time. So all of those things, you know, the Pac-10 at that time was a fast-paced conference. I was always a kid that liked to get up and down the court. It just seemed to fit me really every way.
I thought you were gonna say lack of humidity, because I've been to Houston in the summer. I've been to about Arkansas in the summer. Right. You walk off an airplane and you take a deep breath in and you don't have to go.
Oh man, that is up there. That is as high. So lack of humidity would maybe be my number one reason of why I never moved back.
Right.
That would be that.
Because you're not used to it anymore.
Yeah, I didn't know it as much when I first made those trips, but I learned really quick. I remember I came up here for summer school the summer of 2002, and then I went back home. And so, like, you know, because you got to be up here for a little while to really sense the difference.
You do.
And after 4 weeks here and then going back there, it's like, yeah, I'm probably not making a whole lot of stops here anymore, guys. Like, I'll come home, you know, once a year, whatever, whenever I can. But, yeah, the humidity is a game changer.
It is
Texas,
a difference maker. Yeah. There's a whole lot more. And I'm sure with everything that you said, that you took a lot of pride in the Elite Eight run that the Beavs made a couple years ago because of the strides that they've made as a program.
I was really happy for them. I was, during that time, a lot of people would text me or message me during that time and say, like, congratulations. And the thing is, I really appreciated it because I knew the spirit and the heart from which those messages were coming. But my thing was always like, my time is done. Like, I'm not a player. This is all about them. Like, they're getting it done. They're the ones working. They're doing it. Wayne is the one leading the program. So, like, that's where all my attention was during that time. Like, that's my pride or excitement during that time didn't necessarily come from my involvement with the university. It was just more so like, man, here's this group of 18, 19, 20, 21 year olds who I know what it's like to be a student athlete there, and I know the challenges that have been there, and they're getting it done. So, like, I was just happy for all of them. Awesome. Yeah, it was really cool.
Lamar Hurd, our guest, your why basketball is that thread, and why you keep expanding this umbrella that is getting pretty big here in the Portland metro area. We'll dive into that to start hour number three. This is Dusty and Friends on the Fan.